What happens when a client's past trauma is unresolved and it begins to impact their relationship? During one session with a couple, Dr. Stan Tatkin felt something was a little off, and then he started to pick up on something through countertransference that he almost missed. In just a bit, Stan will share how he worked with this couple to help them move past a traumatic experience that was stunting their growth. But first, Stan shares how trauma impacts relationships and how relationships are important in the healing from trauma.
Since I'm a couple therapist, this is a prime area to work with trauma and to resolve or help resolve trauma on the affective and arousal level, being that there's a person there who's interested and cares and is willing to hold this and tolerate it. And usually where there's one, there's the other. I rarely see somebody who is highly traumatized and the other partner is not. So since we pick by recognition, the likelihood of the other person having something similar is fairly high. And again, we have a situation where there's a quid pro quo, where they are both burdened or taking on the burden of the task of being each other's healers. And when they're not, that's when couple therapy comes into play. As with anything, are they helpful to each other? Are they suitable, ministers to each other in terms of caretakers, parents, and so on? And some people who are very disorganized need this mediation with a third person, a therapist, to do that work a bit with each partner in the room before they can do it with each other. So there's a whole process here. But once somebody resolves an unresolved trauma or loss, they are able to talk about the incident in a very different way, and the other symptoms that are arising around this unresolved issue begin to fade, and the person's able to now venture out again into the world. One of the things we notice with trauma is that it actually stops development from going forward, and it inhibits the search or the tolerance for novelty. It's an anti-novelty problem. And the reason for this is that the person who has been traumatized is on the lookout for anything that is unmanageable or could be hurtful. And that, if untreated, starts to spread like algae, like weeds. So we have that issue, right? If somebody has resolved trauma, they should be moving forward towards complexity. If they have not, it's because it's not resolved yet, because they're still afraid of the unknown. They're still afraid of what they might not be able to handle, what could come their way. They're still afraid of a memory that could put them into panic and make them do things that actually cause them more trouble. I think, again, as a couple therapist, I'm relying so much on the companionship of two people rather than seeking out a therapist every time, but that they are caring for each other. And the reason I know this is possible and not a unicorn is I see it every day with people who are homeless and who have mental illness and trauma. I see those people who are in the in law enforcement or in the military. They have had trauma. And they're either, healed by others. I mean, we're hurt by others and we're healed by others. But these people manage to do it. If they can do it, I believe that almost anybody can. So, working in a two-person psychological system, I place a lot of emphasis and expectation on the partners to be each other's caregivers and healers.
The idea here is to build a sense of trust between the client and their companion or secure attachment figure. You see, having this dependable other can be crucial in cases of unresolved trauma and can help reverse the patterns that prevent healthy development. Now, I mentioned earlier that Stan worked with a couple whose relationship was strained. He continues now with the story of these clients and how this case tested his powers of observation.
A couple came in, a lovely couple, where she was a self-identified island, or otherwise known as an anxious avoidant, and had a pattern through her life of distancing. She maintained a separate apartment even for this. And when things would go awry with her partner, she would escape, leave, and go to this sanctuary. It didn't take very long for that to become ego-dystonic, something that she saw as not in her best interest, before she had seen it as something good, right? Not a problem. But she started to see it pretty quickly as a problem for her, and stopped using it, or stopped feeling it as a relief, actually. She found the relationship better, a better place than to go off by herself. But there were other issues surrounding distancing and avoiding, and one of them had to do with her libido. And here it was a little bit head scratching because her husband complained that she was no longer having any sex with him, was not interested in sex at all. She claimed that she had zero libido because she was postmenopausal, and by all accounts, one would think. There's nothing to see here, move right along. Except in the countertransference, there was a lot of libidinal energy that I could feel. And that doesn't necessarily mean sexual energy, but vitality, right? Vitality, high vitality is linked to not only life energy, libidinal energy, as Mahler put it, but also sexual energy as well, because she dressed in a way that was kind of attractive. And so, why did she seem so attractive if she had no libido? So something wasn't quite right. And as I explored this with them, and I began to back off and say there's nothing here, she on her own brought up something that happened that I was not aware of, and it was with their one and only child. It was an unresolved trauma involving a C-section. And now her husband was there to literally hold her hand. He was quite good as a co-regulator. As I was able to go in depth, frame by frame, step by step, with this experience, which was ever more devastating to her because of her lifelong strategy of auto-regulation, self-stimulation, self-soothing, and her fear of intrusion and being taken over. So the very idea that she was planning a natural birth with her child and turned out to be an emergency for which she was at the hospital for an extended period without knowing what was going on and then had to be opened up. This was trauma for her.
As Stan would discover, not only was this event terribly traumatic for his client, but the traumatic memory was left unprocessed.
This was the worst possible thing, not having any control, being opened up against her will, of being literally and figuratively having her guts out, and disappointed. This was a horrible experience for her. And as she recounted it, it was as if it was happening now, which is what happens with trauma. If not for the partner who was there and holding her physically, you know, Peter Levine, has also talked about in terms of what that does to the nervous system, the well-placed touch, the ability to talk and to work through trauma. He was providing that function. We were able to discover by going through this horrible experience, including the experience of having to pump. Everything was an assault on her person, everything. It was horrible. And this is this was related to her mother being intrusive and insensitive. And her mother, by the way, also reportedly would dash out, left their wedding, left her in the hospital room, just walked out. You know? No wonder that this woman has a sanctuary in another apartment. But she was also able to understand where her libido went. The idea of her husband wanting her to have sex with him was something that felt massively intrusive, massively just for him. You have to remember, with people who are in the distancing group, their experience of relationship is of being used, of being a tool, and not being personally addressed, not having the sensitivity. All people who are approaching characters like this are dangerous. right? Because they want something from me, and it's not for me, it's for them. So all of this to say that everything gets folded, experience gets folded into this trauma, to this experience from childhood, of not only being neglected, but also being intruded upon, invaded, and used. You could understand how this translated to sex and to the husband's wish that she go for hormone replacement therapy. All about him, another intrusion, another assault on her body, and she was going to have nothing of that. And she came to that as we were working through here. She came to that is why she doesn't want to have sex. That is where her libido went. Not because it's not there. It's because this unresolved trauma had been sitting there all along and had affected her sense of self, her feeling safe in the relationship, her impression of her husband wanting things as a demand on her, unfair demand. And on top of that, something that had also come out was her body had changed. And this was something quite interesting. Her mother prided herself on her beauty. And one of the things that this gal, the patient, decided she would never do is be like her mother. And so she became an activist and an earth mother and wanted the natural birth and didn't care about her looks, but she did. And one of the things she had not mourned was the beautiful body she felt she had prior to being pregnant, and that she was horrified by her body, hated her body, didn't like seeing it. How much did that have to do also with being intimate with a partner? How much of that had to do with this whole image of self as being, ugly, disfigured? So this session, even though there was no idea that this unresolved trauma was there, was unearthed by a suspicion that there was a libido through no other means than countertransference, through the feeling that there was something libidinal in her, and then her coming up with this this experience. It was quite stunning and beautiful to participate and to witness.
By picking up on the subtle clues of the session, Stan was able to discover a lost piece of the puzzle. This helped his client deal with an unresolved trauma that was continuing to affect her life. Now, as you remember from the main session of our program in our talk with Dr. Laurel Parnell, trauma can stunt our client's developmental growth. So finding a way to process trauma and to reintegrate those experiences can often be the first step in growth. In the next bonus, we'll look into the idea of vicarious trauma and how to help clients move through that. I'll see you there.